we go. I see we're recording. Shall we try this again?
I think let's give it another shot.
Hello and welcome to Funny Books with Aaron and Polly. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And Paul, you know, I seem to recall promising you, I can't remember if I did this on the mics or off the mics last week, but I promised you that I would have watched not only the remaining, nine episodes of Batman the Caped Crusader by the time we record this week, but that I would also have watched the Zack Snyder cut of Blood Moon or Rebel Moon, whatever the hell it's called.
Yes.
And I have done neither of those things.
Yeah, same here. Same here. I've done neither of those things as well. I do plan to. You know what? I mentioned to Aaron before the podcast, I will be out of town this weekend. We're actually recording this on a Thursday evening. I'm actually going down for a little behind the scenes peek at Halloween Horror Nights down in Universal Orlando. So if you like that kind of stuff that we talk about on the podcast, sometimes make sure you are subscribed to our YouTube channel, IOM Geek. But I have to fly down to Florida, and perhaps I will download season one of Batman the Caped Crusader, and I'll get it all watched up on that plane, because I don't know that I can watch naked robot ladies on the plane in Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon.
I think you can. I think you can. Well, I have spent the week watching John Wayne movies. I have inexplicably, for reasons I cannot explain, I have gotten hooked on the John Wayne movies, in particular the John Wayne movies with director John Ford. And I've just been gobbling them up. I've watched all kinds of good stuff. And
is it because you're not getting enough Western in your life? Perhaps there's not enough Jellystone in your life?
That could be. That could be. I have just really, you know, it all started with I watched Rio Bravo, and, you know, which is a, you know, John Wayne movie with Dean Martin and Ricky Nelson. And I was so very entertained by that. And it's not a John Ford movie, but it's a John Wayne movie. But I was so highly entertained by that, I just started diving in. And then I noticed that the ones that I was really enjoying were the John Ford films. And so I just kind of leaned into those, and I'm getting a huge kick out of them. I watched The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I love
The other night and I'd never seen it before. The other night I watched Stagecoach. Have you ever seen Stagecoach?
Not in a long time. 1938
film with John Wayne, and it's one of his earliest films. And there is this fantastic shot where John Ford pushes in on John Wayne as his character is introduced. And it is gorgeous. It's black and white, and it is gorgeous. And I rewound that thing like three times to watch it, because it was just him swinging this rifle and calling out to the stagecoach as it was approaching. The Ringo Kid. Fantastic fucking movie. I can't get over that I've gone my entire life and had not watched Stagecoach up to now. All this time I've wasted not watching and rewatching Stagecoach. It's a brilliant film. Loved it.
And look, now your life has changed.
My life is changed for the better. It is changed. It is changed. So, I mean, I have been gobbling up. I've watched the first two of the three movie set of John Ford's Cavalry series. So I watched Ford Apache with Henry Fonda, and Henry Fonda just plays a douchebag in this movie. And then I watched She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, and I think the third one is Rio Grande, and I haven't watched that one yet. But anyway, I have been crazy about watching these John Wayne movies.
This is what happens when you take a week off,
and
and you don't have anything specific. It's not like you're out of town. You're just able to get caught up on your movies and stuff and your comic book reading, Aaron, because
that's right.
You know, dear listeners, you know, we've been talking about Blood Hunt on the podcast, Marvel's Blood Hunt. I think I mentioned this on the podcast, but if I didn't, you know, we talked about how they have these red band copies or editions of each Blood Hunt issue, which are same story, but actually some new pages, some new art, and extra added gore, like legitimate violence. Like, you know, like in the first issue, Doctor Strange gets stabbed through like his chest. In the red band edition, he gets sliced in half. Like, it's you know, they and it's visceral and nice and gory. But those Red Band editions are not available digitally. So I got annoyed because I found out these things existed and I was very interested in them. So I actually purchased all 5 issues, Red Band copies, you know, like paper. I have a physical comic of each one of these. But that, you know, it's been a while since I purchased a Marvel comic. I forgot that they come with digital codes. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, Aaron, would you like the digital codes for Blood Hunt? Because Aaron skipped out on Blood Hunt because, you know, when the solicitations first came out, it sounded rather ridiculous.
It did. Highly ridiculous.
But, you know, we have loved it on the podcast, and Aaron, you know, held his ground. He's like, I'll just read it when it's over. And so, Aaron, now that it's over, you have been supplied all 5 digital copies, and he read them this week. I didn't even say, hey, read them before we podcast. I didn't give him that ultimatum. He did it himself.
Well, I thought they were beautifully drawn.
Oh, yeah. Pepe Larraz.
They are gorgeous books. And I got to say, I think it's one of the more efficient crossovers that Marvel has done in a very long time. And when I say efficient, the fact that they told a whole lot of story in 5 issues, and I know that there were a bazillion tie-ins, but I will say
very few of them felt vital. In fact, in the end, the only ones that I would say like added to the story, most of them were very good. The only ones that I would say added to the story are the issues of Doctor Strange and the issues of Moon Knight that tied in, because they're all written by Jed MacKay. Yeah. So I think those tied in a little more effectively than most of the others, which, again, not bad, but not vital to the story.
Well, you know, I thought that it was tremendous how much story they crammed into 5 issues. And the fact that I didn't read any tie-ins and didn't feel lost, even though clearly there were things happening off the page.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a well done story. I thought the only thing that I found surprising was what a small role Dracula plays in, you know, the big vampire Blood Hunt. I mean, he's got a role, but it just seems very off to the side, right? But I thought it was great. I very much enjoyed it. I'm glad I read it. It's a sad thing that they scared me off with their solicitation language.
Yeah,
I did think that the solicits were ridiculous.
Yeah, and I loved Blood Hunt. Like I said, you know, in last week's podcast, I think the only issue I had with it was that the resolution of the Varney stuff.
Yeah.
Felt a little rushed because all of a sudden his blood cabal or whatever they're called,
were just taken care of.
Yeah, they're like, oh, they ran away. Like, oh, okay, that feels convenient. Like, that actual resolution felt a little rushed to me. But then you freaking wrap it up with Dr. Doom as the new Sorcerer Supreme speaking to the world. I'm like, okay, this was good. I'm excited about what this sets up.
Yeah, I think that it changed the status quo nicely, and it made me very interested to hop back into Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange having surrendered the mantle of the Sorcerer Supreme to Doctor Doom so that he could enact the Montesi formula and, get rid of all them vamps.
So I did not get a chance to read Doctor Strange, but we read 2 Jed MacKay written.
Yeah.
Post Blood Hunt books, and I have quite a few thoughts to share about Avenger 17. But before we do, I did purchase Doctor Strange, but I've not had a chance to read it. Does it tackle, like, is Doctor Doom in appearance in Doctor Strange,
talk about him a lot? They talk about him a whole lot, and you know, Doctor Doom has put all of Latveria inside a bubble that Doctor Strange can't penetrate. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of, you know, Doctor Strange dealing with the betrayal, you know, of Doctor Doom and, you know, really being disappointed in his own, you know, trusting of Doctor Doom and then people telling him, you know, you didn't have a whole lot of choice, you know.
Yeah.
But it was good. I really enjoyed, you know, kind of that new status quo for Doctor Strange. And I hope that they don't rush to a resolution to get him back as Sorcerer Supreme. I like the idea of Doctor Doom holding on to that for a bit.
Yeah, I will say, I think both books this week, both of these post-Blood Hunt books, they're both aftermath books. So that could be why there's not much Doctor Strange in the, or excuse me, Doctor Doom in them. They're just kind of establishing how the lead characters feel post Blood Hunt, because that's very much how Avengers 17 is as well.
Right.
I felt like Avengers 17, which features, you know, the current Avengers basically licking their wounds after Blood Hunt. You know, even though they've defeated Blood Hunt, or excuse me, even though they've defeated Varney, they're kind of torn, right? Carol is like, you know, but thousands died. I consider that a failure. And so there's quite a lot of angst in this book, and set up for what's next, which is that, you know, we have an appearance of Hyperion in the book, which always turns me off.
My thing about Hyperion is I really enjoy the Hyperion stories that are told in his own world. It's when he's over in the regular 616 that I think that his treatment is often weird and confusing. It's like, okay, who are we talking about now? Because there's different Hyperions, right? You know, it just kind of depends on which alternate universe Hyperion you're talking about. And that was kind of where I was with it. It just seemed a little out of left field, and maybe that's because I haven't read the previous Avengers books in this run, but it just felt very like, oh, okay, here's the next crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, but, I mean, it's very much set up for that, but like the rest of the book is, you know, kind of characters interacting and just kind of talking through, like I said, licking their wounds post Blood Hunt,
which I didn't hate. And I appreciated the big conversation in the book is, you know, we failed because thousands died during Blood Hunt. And, you know, and the person who's really championing that position is, you know, Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. And, you know, T'Challa, the Black Panther, is saying we saved billions.
Yeah.
We restored the world, right? We brought the sun back. This was a win. And she's like, but thousands died. And we're the Avengers. And to be Avengers, that we are held to a higher standard. And those are not acceptable losses. And I thought that was a really interesting sort of position. Like, you know, it's kind of like that Spider-Man story that Dan Slott was writing for a while that, you know, no one dies. And, you know, that's when you're dealing with this type of catastrophic event, I think that's a kind of unrealistic expectation.
Yeah. And I think, you know, but that's, I will say that's the book also written by Jed MacKay, art by Valerio Sheedy, the artist of Gods. So, you know, always.
And it is a gorgeous book. Yeah.
It is a gorgeous book. You know, it's one of the, I really appreciated her interaction with Tony Stark. Because one, I forgot. Well, I shouldn't say I forgot. I did not know she was an alcoholic and Tony Stark, Stark was her sponsor and blah, 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 blah. I think you guys have actually mentioned that before. It's just not a storyline I read. And but he talked to her about, like, just because you're not addicted to alcohol anymore doesn't mean you're not an addict. And now you're a grief addict or a guilt addict. And I'm like, okay, that's actually, you know, like, that's pretty well worded. It's pretty introspective. Like, I like that scene in the book. Like, that scene and the scene with Captain America and Storm, where he's basically recruiting her to the Avengers, I like that. Like I said, this book was – there was no action in this book. There wasn't a fight sequence in this book. It was a lot of, like, just talking and setting up what comes next.
I miss – the Avengers being a little bit more rooted. You know, for a while they were living in a disembodied, decaying, dead celestial head, right? Which just seems gross. And now they're in the Impossible City. Do I have that correct?
Yeah.
Is that what that is? And that's, you know, kind of like the Justice League Watchtower, you know, orbits the Earth or whatever. I miss them being in Avengers Mansion. I miss Avengers Tower. I wish that they were a little more grounded. I always felt like that was a miss on the Justice League side with them being in the Watchtower. I prefer Hall of Justice League. And I prefer you're able to walk through the streets of New York and walk up to Avengers Mansion, to be perfectly honest. And I hate the Mount Olympus like setting for the Avengers. It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
And, yeah. So yeah. I'm ready for that to stop. And I had hoped that with Jason Aaron leaving the Avengers that that would have been corrected. But I see that it is not.
No.
But, well, yeah. I liked Avengers. I liked Doctor Strange. But Paul, I did not like Uncanny X-Men number one.
Okay. Before we get into Uncanny X-Men.
Well, no. I have already transitioned.
But I want to ask, are you going to read the next issue of both of those books?
I am. Yes, I am going to read Avengers number 18 and Doctor Strange number 19.
But it sounds like
hard out on Uncanny X-Men number two,
which is crazy to me because I loved this book.
Could not stand it.
What didn't you like about it?
Number one, I feel like I've read this before. With the people seizing control of the X-Mansion, you know, the school. I mean, I literally, I'm like, I know I've read this before, and I haven't gone and researched what it was, but it was another post-event where somebody else is seizing control of the Institute for, you know, gifted children or whatever.
Yeah.
And so there was that deja vu piece of it. It focused a little more on Rogue and Gambit than I like. They're not my favorite characters.
I like both of them.
And I like them fine. I don't like them front and center. And this whole, who else is going to lead us but you, Rogue? Who else would we follow? I'm like, seriously?
There's like 1,000 mutants.
I can think of any number of other mutants I would follow other than Rogue. I did not care for there was so much I didn't care for in this book.
I loved this book. I really loved this book. I loved the scene where they visit the kid who's dying in the hospital, and you know they kind of it's another like let's go lick our wounds kind of book. But you know, I think one of the things that Gail Simone says in the backup essay is, you know, that she's kind of establishing, or you know what they're trying to establish is the new Xavier Magneto relationship is Rogue and Cyclops, and I'm like, I kind of like that. I think I like that status quo. You know, the dragon thing in the book was a little weird.
That was weird. I didn't care for that either.
Like randomly there's a dragon who has the eye of Agamotto, and I'm like,
yeah,
it clearly it's been set up in another book. I felt like that was weird, but it's not like it took away from my scene. It just felt unusual for a first issue.
The fact that Wolverine knew about this dragon having the other eye of Agamotto, I just thought that was okay. Well, why does Wolverine know about that? You know, it just seemed weird to me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know Logan's got his fingers in everything. In every corner of the Marvel universe, you'll find Logan. But the book didn't jibe with me. And I'm someone who really enjoyed what was being done with, you know, the Immortal X-Men. I liked that Hickman run.
Yeah. I liked it when it first started, but
yeah, same. And I have not finished the run. I've read about midway through it, but it's a lot of damn books. And that's the problem with the X-Men.
Because that's a lot of that's the problem I'm going to have with this new X-Men regime too. Because you know they show all these books, like you've got Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah.
Exceptional, Dazzler, Wolverine, Phoenix, X-Factor, X-Force, and I'm like, I don't need all of them really. Yeah. But I will say I was lukewarm on X-Men number 1. Funny enough, written by Jed McKay, but with art by Ryan Stegman. Very lukewarm on that book. I loved this book, and I will absolutely pick up issue 2 of Uncanny X-Men. I'll pick up issue 2 of both of them, but I'll be excited about this one. the other one I'll just buy to talk about on the podcast. So I'm sorry to hear that you didn't care for it, because I found quite a bit to like. I found it an unusual first issue.
Mm-hmm.
By nature of the villain that it featured, and
yeah,
that
it certainly had a different tone.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I did.
Yeah, but Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, since we are talking about Marvel Comics, let's go ahead and talk about what else is coming from Marvel next week, including the next damn book in the X-Men books, which is X-Factor number 1. X-Factor number 1 looks like it features kind of the classic team. I see Angel, a form of some characters who have been featured in X-Men before. So we've got Angel, we've got Havoc, we've got Rain. I don't remember her name.
The werewolf lady?
Yeah, the werewolf lady. Yeah. So X-Factor number 1 comes out, as well as the second issue of the Jed McKay, Ryan Stegman X-Men book that I just said I was going to give a shot. Mm-hmm. And we have the third issue of the Ultimates, which we just by t- timing, have not really had an opportunity to talk about on the podcast. Yeah. So maybe we'll talk about it next week, because I have quite a few thoughts.
Yeah, we'll see.
From DC Comics, we get the latest issues of Action Comics, Batman, Gotham by Gaslight, that new series, as well as the start of DC vs. Vampire World War V, which is the sequel to the DC vs. Vampire series.
No.
Yes. From Image Comics, we get the latest issue of Geiger, which is the apparently a pretty big deal, though, the end of the first arc, as well as Transformers number 11 that Aaron is not reading.
That is correct.
And from IDW, we get, well, actually, not there's one more past this, but in IDW, you know, when they relaunched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they advertised that there's kind of like three books in the line. There's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there's like, I don't remember, there's like one that's like Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's one called The Night Watcher. And so Night Watcher is a vigilante, I guess, in New York, who's clearly, you know, related to the Ninja Turtles in some way. Looks like it's a mystery of who the character is. And so that book starts next week. And also from Distillery, you know, Distillery was this comic company that was started by the people who used to run Comixology. They started this distillery, and they're like, you know, to get it in to get comic shops to support them, they only release things physically first. But now they're bringing some of those projects to digital. And the one next week is Gone, which is a new science fiction graphic novel by artist Jock, who, you know, has done great work for DC Comics.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious about this. Yeah. It's written and drawn by him, where it's an impoverished and distant planet where menial workers scratch out a living, resupplying starships. The best place to be is Gone, and that's exactly where 13-year-old Abby wants to be. Along with her street-tough friends, Abby stows away on a colossal luxury space liner for a chance at a better life. But unbeknownst to her, some of her friends are not who they seem. Uh-oh. Abby finds herself branded as a saboteur, and she desperately struggles to evade the ship's deadly crew and to stay alive.
That's no good. You don't want that.
No. I'm curious about it.
I am too.
It's a little bit pricey. It's $20, which feels like a lot.
Feels like a lot for a digital book.
For a digital book, but you know, we'll see. Maybe that'll be a sale item. You know, I feel like $9.99 is probably a good price point for a digital graphic novel. So we'll see.
But yeah, I'm very interested. I'll take a peek at it.
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about X-Men number 1 and Avengers number 17 and Doctor Strange number 18, but really could care less about what you think about Bloodhunt. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. If we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, you know, I am deeply sorry that Andrew and Wayne weren't here to give me crap about Bloodhunt.
2 weeks in a row, but maybe next week. Maybe
No. It's subject.
Bloodhunt is in the past. It's over now.
Yeah. We don't talk about it. We're done. Yeah. Yeah. So they missed out.
Yeah.
So
maybe
they can send an email to the Ideology of Madness mailbox, and, you know, we can entertain it there. But no way. No, nothing else.
Nope.
We won't talk about it on the show.
All right. Paul, well, we will catch you next week.
You have a safe trip to Florida. And thank you, sir. I'm going to go watch another John Wayne movie.
All right. You have fun.
Bye.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.